Oh, we's awful ignorant to listen to Drunk on Comics, ain't we, Ewalt?
And dang proud of it.
Drunk on Comics presents Motor City Comic Con Interviews Part 3, Drunken Nightly, Let's Have Fun.
Are you drunk now? Because I think... Dude, when we recorded our intros like earlier in the week, you couldn't even talk.
And I still can't talk. Well, I'm still reminiscing about this night in particular.
You can remember it?
Parts of it.
Yeah. Well, luckily we have proof that we were there on Saturday night. And actually, we have some of the most fun interviews on here. Some of the most...
random.
Definitely the most random, I think, four grouping of interviews that we have. But definitely, I think, some of the highlights of my entire weekend there.
Yes.
So we're going to get it kicked off with Jason Uvari, who is... That's one of the most fun, drunken, rambling interviews I think we've done in a long time.
And just to trick you, we're not going to kick it off with him. I have this out of lineup for what we're going to do when we're reading this.
Damn it.
Bob Camp's going to kick it off.
Oh, it is Bob Camp?
Yes.
Yeah, the legendary Bob Camp. We kept calling him legendary, and he thought it was funny.
Yes. So. Creator of Ren and Stimpy. That was the most random interview I think we've ever done, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, and thanks to our good buddy Dirk Manning, who is a fantastic interviewer, if you heard earlier in the week our interviews, for introducing us to Bob. Fantastic gentleman.
We also got the chance to talk to the lovely Cosmic Casey.
Yep.
And that was also another interesting interview.
This is one I'm going to have to hear to remember. and then actually we finish it off with, I don't normally get excited about media guests when it comes to these shows.
Oh, but this one, you were just like, this is so awesome. And not only was it awesome, we got the chance to interview him. We got the chance to hang out with him every single night of the show.
Yeah, Billy Zabka, you know, man, what a cool guy. And this is, it wouldn't be a podcast if Tony's phone doesn't go off. but anyway, yeah, so take a peek. Tony has to answer his phone. We'll be back here in a few.
All right, well, we are having some fun here at the after party at Motor City Comic Con. We got the full crew out here, and we are with the legendary Bob Camp. Bob, tell some of our listeners a little bit about what you do and what you have done that made you so legendary.
Ha! That's good... Well, see, the thing about it is there's a statute of limitations, you know, and I got to wait 7 years to tell some stuff, I think. But you know, I don't know, I just been around a lot. And for a long time, and I've kind of had to adapt to different kinds of jobs and do different kinds of stuff. And I think if you ask anyone in here, whether they're famous or not, that's been doing something like this as long as I have, you're going to get a lot of great stories. You're going to hear a lot of, like, cool stuff. But I started out as a street artist, working at fairs and rodeos and amusement parks and stuff like that, and ended up in Cape Cod in Provincetown. Doing caricatures. I met a cartoonist there named Gary Hallgren. Took me to New York, introduced me to Larry Hama at Marvel Comics. I started doing movie parodies for Crazy Magazine. And when that folded, went on to Larry's other books. I worked on Conan, The Nam, and G.I. Joe, did a lot of G.I. Joe, and Bizarre Adventures and Savage Tales, and any of the books that Larry edited. I learned a lot from him. Worked in comics and started working on Thundercats. Thundercats for Rankin Bass, doing some animation work, design work.
Oh, so fun.
So from that, I kind of got burnt out on comics and moved to L.A. and got into animation full-time. Worked on Tiny Toons. And
I didn't realize you did Tiny Toons.
Well, before Tiny Toons, I worked on The Real Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fine. Check it out. I worked for Michael Gross, and Will Mineo was the director. And I sat all day drawing ghosts and monsters with Bruce Timm.
Wow.
What?
So, yeah. And it was kind of fun because I'm like, I used to call him the human sewing machine. Because watching him draw was like watching a sewing machine needle. He'd chain smoke cigarettes and go, and just draw perfect drawings, you know. And just stayed in LA and did a lot of animation. You know, worked on animating shows.
Worked on a little show called Ren and Stimpy.
A little show, yeah. I was working at Deke on Ghostbusters, and then I met John Kay through Jim Gomez, who was working on Beanie and Cecil with him. So they invited me to come work on Beanie and Cecil. And I storyboarded one cartoon before the whole thing went tits up and John got us all fired. And then, I kind of hovered around for a little bit and then got on Tiny Toons. And that's where a lot of the Ren and Stimpy people came out of was Tiny Toons. You know, Chris Riccardi and Jim Smith.
Okay.
Those guys. And a lot of them had been Mighty Mouse alumni, you know. For the
Mighty Mouse people.
Yeah, so you know they'd already learned how to be bad from working with John and Ralph.
I gotta ask, as far as Tiny Toons, and I know this doesn't happen often, but did you ever actually get a chance to mingle with the cast? I'm a huge fan of like voice acting and the guys
Tiny
that
Toons?
Worked on that show. Yeah,
you know it.
I know it doesn't happen often.
Well,
so.
The thing about it was, is it was a very sort of big corporate show. It was like, it was high concept. We're going to do baby versions of the Bugs Bunny
Spielberg,
characters.
Spielberg, right?
Yeah, it was. And so it was run by the writers and the producers. And we didn't really have any kind of control or participation in anything other than was specifically our job, which is normal.
Okay.
It's normal.
Right.
So you just do your job. So none of us got to go to recordings, and you know, the producers went, and you know, in a lot of animated series, they have voice directors.
Yes.
So the directors, people like me, don't go direct the voices because somebody thought it'd be a good idea to get somebody who's not a cartoonist to do it. So,
or funny.
But that's not to say that they're not all funny. One of the funniest people in the world is Charlie Adler, and he's a great voice director.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And he's wonderful. But I don't know.
Well, okay, Tiny Toons is one thing. Ren and Stimpy is a whole nother beast where there's so many things that were created for that show that are just memorable in my mind that are so zany and out there.
Well, Ren and Stimpy broke every mold there was for an animated show at that time, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was... It was just beautiful. I mean, the things that were done, the close-ups with, you know, showing a close-up.
I painted the nose goblins.
Oh!
And we glued a real booger to it.
That was one of the scenes I was just going to ask about. Is that
magic nose goblin?
Well, when we started the show, when we did the pilot, I was the only one who could paint. I painted all the backgrounds in the pilot.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. And then we got, you know, Bill Ray and... a lot of other really talented people, so I was off the hook. But I, every now and then, I'd jump in and do one, you know, just to keep my hand in. And we did a lot of nice art. I don't know why nobody's done a coffee table book of the art. Like, I designed most of the title cards, and the paintings are beautiful. You know, and the backgrounds are beautiful. You know what? You don't hear people talking about the backgrounds on Ren and Stimpy, but we did the best backgrounds in the business, and a lot of people still copy it. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Now. Curiosity, how was that done? Was that done on celluloid at the time? Or
backgrounds were painted with cell paints on cold-pressed watercolor paper.
Oh, okay.
Nice texture for dry brush and things like
that.
Yeah. And cell vinyl paint is very durable. It's like acrylic, but it's a liquid acrylic.
Okay.
And it's bulletproof, and it's color fast and bright and fun and easy to use, dries quickly. You shoot it through an airbrush, it's wonderful paint.
What is the animation process like? I mean, that's something I'm not familiar with.
I don't know anymore. I don't know. It's all different.
It's you way go, different now. Yeah.
It used to be real simple. Everybody did it the same way. You know, you did your pre-production here, and then you sent it to Korea.
Oh.
And the it was a very physical process, but now everything's digital. You know, I'm doing character layouts on the SpongeBob movie now, and I'm working on a Cintiq tablet.
Oh.
You know, I'm not drawing with pencil anymore.
Out of all the creations within Ren and Stimpy and the small gags that would always be reoccurred, which one was your favorite that you kind of came up with?
I think the best thing I ever did was Stimpy's Invention. It was my idea. I wrote it. I storyboarded it. I mean, I didn't direct it, but I did most of it. You know. And I'm proudest of that.
Where did Powdered Toast Man come from?
That came out of John's ass.
Which is why he flew backwards?
And you squeeze it.
No, you know, he's one of John's characters, like Mr. Horse. Mr. Horse is pure John. It's even John's voice.
Yeah. Oh, really? I didn't know John did the voice.
John was Rent.
Well, yeah, okay, I knew that, but I didn't know about Mr. Horse, though.
He was Mr. Horse, yeah. Well, after John got fired, I picked up doing Mr. Horse. I did Mr. Horse.
Wow. Can you tell us a story about Log and how that came to be?
Actually,
John made up Log. John said, look, we need to do a cartoon about Log. So I made a cartoon about
that.
Log.
Actually, I heard a little rumor perhaps at dinner tonight about a character that never came to be called Crouton.
No, no, no. I had the idea, but I never followed through on it.
Right.
But I always thought that Powdered Toast Man should have a super dog named Crouton.
I got to get that sketch now because everyone's trying to get up on me.
I'm actually from Toronto, so I have to ask about the Royal Canadian Kilted Yaksman. That was so huge at home at the time. Well, everyone loved it. It was always, we're playing it all the time.
You know what? It was John's idea.
Yeah.
Because he's Canadian.
Yeah.
And when John got fired, we finished the cartoon, you know.
Okay.
So it was really John's vision, but I tell you what, I look at that cartoon and I see pure Chris Riccardi genius, you know. And the boards are the best, and the gags are the best, and the drawings are the best, and you know. And we gave Chris the credit, the director credit on that.
He earned it.
Very nice. Yeah.
What were your babies on the show? What were the characters that you hold closest to your heart?
I love Stimpy.
Yeah.
Stimpy, I think, is in my mind, one of the greatest cartoon characters ever created, because he's pure love.
Yes. Yeah.
He's unconditional love. Right?
That's
and
true.
He's so fucking charming and cute and fun to draw. I hate drawing Ren. I despise Ren.
Well, Ren is an asshole.
And he's fucking hard to draw. I still struggle drawing him. It should be easy after all this time, but it's not. I struggle.
Wow.
Chris Riccardi could draw him better than anybody. And also Jim Smith, the great Jim Smith. You know, people don't talk about Jim much, but Jim is one of the creators of the show and a genius. Yeah. And funny.
So, what are you currently working on right now?
I'm doing character layouts on SpongeBob.
You mentioned that, but it's a little late in the night. I've killed a few brain cells.
I'm going to stay close to the fire.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what's it like going to a true kid show from a kid show for adults?
You know what? It's relaxing. Because Ren and Stimpy was stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. Okay. Check it out. When we moved to Games after they closed in Spumco and we opened up the new offices in Beverly Hills, I had a very swanky office. I had it had been a guy running a law firm's office, and it was huge with bookshelves going up, you know, 14 feet, and a big long office. I had an executive washroom with a shower. I had a fully stocked wet bar. You know, it was a good deal.
Nice.
It was nice. And we'd have writing sessions out on the back balcony, which ran the length of the building and had a beautiful panoramic view of Beverly Hills. And we'd be out there writing, and my secretary would bring out a pitcher of martinis, and everybody had their own martini glasses and roll doobies and just, you know, hang out and laugh and come up with funny cartoons. Yeah.
Between our podcast, you know, Drunk on Comics, and Jay's podcast, Snell Getting Weapon, you just talk two of the best things in the world.
Yeah.
Oh, check it out.
You said all the right marks.
What we did a couple of times is we'd have to write the show, so we'd rent a suite at the Chateau Marmont in Hollywood, which is where all the Hollywood celebrities go to bone, you know?
And it's
where Belushi died.
Yes.
Oh.
It's a hotel Belushi died in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, it's where Lindsay Lohan pulled all her madness.
And we'd go there and we'd like have a Dr. Gonzo week. We'd just stay holed up in this hotel room and just room service, and we'd stagger out a week later with the series.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
Yeah, it was fun.
What year did Ren and Stimpy start?
1902.
When did it start airing?
When did you do the second episode? We missed our second air date.
Yeah.
I remember watching wow. as a kid. And
missed
and
the second airway.
Oh,
and boy,
it's a rerun again. It's a rerun again.
Why, boy, were the advertisers pissed. Yeah, we started fucking up day one.
No, but what year did it start? Do you remember?
We started the pilot in 89. I think it premiered in 90.
Okay. Because I was starting to remember. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I was in high school, just about ready to graduate college. And I watched that thing in college like a mad motherfucker because, you know, it's like, you know, you sit there just drinking beer, hanging out with your friends, going, ah! Yeah. Best damn show on TV. Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. But if somebody said, here's $1 million a year, draw what you want, that's already established.
I would do the Ren and Stimpy feature.
Okay.
I have it in my head, and I've been ready to do it since the end of the show. I'm just waiting for a chance to do it.
Thought about a Kickstarter?
I thought about that, but you know what? Really? I shouldn't have to do that. I should just be able to walk in and go, hey, dude, you know, to the guy at Paramount, let's do this. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I know now is the right time.
Oh, because absolutely.
Because of you and you and all you
well,
people.
We're at the perfect age. Yeah. The perfect age. We're primed.
But we're also at the age.
And I think it'll break records.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. All these executives at these places that are saying no, they're fucking assholes. The fans will come to Kickstarter if you ever truly feel like doing it.
I know.
We are saying, I mean, I want to fucking see that.
Yeah, but it's kind of a rights thing, right? Like, who owns it?
Paramount. No, yeah. Well, no, it's Viacom.
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah.
Paramount would
good
be...
luck with Viacom, right?
Oh, man. God damn.
Look, Paramount would be the people to talk to.
It would be right. Like one of those Veronica Mars things, though, where they said, hey, how much money do we have to raise to make this movie? And what studio was it that told Veronica Mars, you raise $1 million, you can make the Veronica Mars movie? And they put it on Kickstarter and they said, hey, if we get $1 million, we can make this.
How many millions did they get?
Oh, my God.
How many millions would it take in 10 minutes? One or two? Three,
oh, my, no.
Four?
I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah, it was ridiculous how much money they made on
no,
that.
No, with Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, fuck, man.
Sure. Are you kidding me?
I bet you a million in a day. I wouldn't doubt.
You know what, though?
I would say no bullshit. A million in a week. Just what would you need up front?
You know what? You could.
I know.
They make movies for $100 million, but it's stupid. You can make a movie for $1 million.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
You can. And you just get like 8 or 10 really talented people, and they do everything.
This guy here.
You know, people who know how to write, people who know how to draw, people who know how to animate. You know, and.
We're at a convention. There's plenty of those around here. Yeah. We should start this right now. Let's go back into your room.
The way to do it is you partner up with somebody who's going to do the service work, who's going to do the stuff. You know, you keep that sort of separate. That's you do all the pre-production, and then you get some studio to pony up for the expensive part. Because development's cheap, very cheap to do.
How did you end up doing the voice work when you did it? There was no one to do it.
The microphone and did it.
Really? Didn't want to bother getting someone to do it, or
no? You know what? Look, dude. Okay. If somebody put you in charge of a show and didn't tell you how to do it, wouldn't you just make shit up?
Oh, yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
I did. I made it up. It's like, okay, I'm a voice actor.
Bob, what voices did you do?
The what?
What voices did you do?
Oh, I did lots of them, but usually secondary characters.
Okay.
I was the baboon. I was the sergeant in the army. I was Lumpenloaf the wrestlers. You know.
Awesome.
I was lots of secondary characters.
See, because I
I got it.
We's awful ignorant, ain't we, Walt?
Dang proud of it.
You know, I didn't do Admiral
originally. Right there.
Well, we don't want to take up all your time tonight, but where can our listeners find you? Are you on Twitter? Or you
later,
on
I'll be phone? I'll be passed out between a couple of cars.
Do you have Facebook? Do you have Twitter? Do you have a website that we could reach you at?
I'm on Facebook, but I'm maxed out on friends.
They can follow, though.
Yeah. Huh?
They can follow you.
Follow me. Yeah, they can follow me. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right, so look up Bob Camp there. Are you on Twitter at all?
I think so. I really don't know. Facebook is too much already. I don't need another one, you know?
Is there a website that they can try to contact you through or see what you're working on right now?
USgovernment.org.
Oh, wait, is it healthcare.org? It may or may not work.
It's actually whitehouse.com.
You know what? There is a Bob Lab. Bob Lab is my company, BOBLAB. It's fun to say Bob Lab. Bob Lab on Facebook. Just look me up. It's a group. It's a page. Yeah, it's a page. It's not a group. It's a page, and I post stuff about animation and stuff like that on there, and you can come there and follow that. That's really cool. And what I'm interested in is other people in animation or comics or anything like that that can say, hey, Bob, check this out. What do you think? You know, it's a good, I want it to be a place. I want it to be like Huffington Post, you know.
It's a sounding board. That's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
a sounding board.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. So if anybody's interested in posting anything about, you know, what we do here and what's going on here, that's awesome.
That is wonderful. Heck yeah. That is wonderful. Yeah.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
We'll let you be to get back to your drinks and your duties.
Yeah.
Getting ready to pass out.
Yeah, we'll correspond in that corner for you. You'll be fine.
You guys really hook up on Facebook. I'm interested in that because I do Facebook a lot, you know.
Yeah, he said doo-doo.
I said what?
He said doo-doo.
Doo-doo? I said doo-doo. I do it, too. Come on, you do too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, you said that earlier about the name. We have a grocery chain in Canada called Loblaws.
Blah, blah, blah. I know all about it. I was just in Ottawa, and we drove past blah, blah, so I went, blah, blah, blah.
Bob, blah, blah, in Ottawa?
Bob, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 in Ottawa.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man.
Bob, okay, thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome to Party Central. Some terrible background music here at the after party, Motor City Comic Con. Derek, Tony, Kevin, Jay from An Elegant Weapon, sitting with Jason Uvari. Did I say it right this time?
Yes, sir. You got it.
My long-lost cousin.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, his wife is your long-lost cousin.
Oh, just a little podcast.
Cousin by marriage.
So, cousin through marriage.
Okay, tell people about what you draw.
I draw, at this point, I draw anything that I find cool, which is anything pop culture, anything comic book that I think is fun and cool to draw at this point, really.
That's really descriptive.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's a good thing you're not a writer.
Amen to that. No, Batman, Superman,
fucking right, Batman.
Anything from the Batman universe, I love. I'm drawing stuff from Game of Thrones. I've done stuff from.
Well, let's back up for a second.
All right.
Assume that people have not seen your stuff like we have.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about your style.
It's kind of a graffiti style. Very angular. Very. Some of my major influences are Umberto Ramos, who's doing the new Amazing Spider-Man. Scotty Young.
Also doing Revelations.
Revelations and Crimson. Yep. Some of the best books ever. Scotty Young, who I've been following forever, since starting with his stuff doing Human Torch.
Have you had a chance
to
meet him here?
Yes, I did. Okay. I'll be honest with you, I was a complete and total fangirl when I met him. I was completely speechless, like, oh my God, it's you!
I won't go the route of saying that you're wearing a skirt, but you are wearing a kilt.
I am not wearing a skirt. It's a kilt. There's a difference.
He's got a kilt complex. Leave him alone.
Thank you very much, my friend. That's what I'm talking about.
What's your problem with you?
Well, you know why Scotsmen wear kilts, don't you?
the sheep
don't hear their zippers.
All right, yeah. I've heard that a few too many times, and luckily the sheep haven't heard it at all.
Jason, let me tell you, you have a lovely sporran.
Thank you very much, lad. Welcome. You can handle my sporran anytime you want.
Oh, excellent.
God love the man who brought this whiskey.
Yeah. You know how a Scotsman finds a sheep in high grass?
How's that?
Very satisfying.
Well, it's the one thing that I say when any woman asks me, well, what's worn under your kilt? I said, nothing's worn. It's all in perfect, fine working order. But no, I... But yeah, I mean, my major influences is Umberto Ramos, Scotty Young, Chris Pacello, and
well, I haven't heard Pacello in a long time, honestly.
Chris Pacello, I love his stuff. I love what he's doing. He and Ramos were going back and forth on Uncanny X-Men for a while, and you bastards got me speaking in a Scottish accent, and now I can't get rid of it. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
I'm terribly sorry.
Don't worry, I've honestly done entire podcasts talking like this.
All right, so I don't feel bad. All right,
so
we're moving on then, all right?
Jay, you may have done entire fucking podcasts with it, but you haven't done them well.
Thanks, that's going to help my audience.
But no, in all honesty, Scotty Young, who was here at Motor City this year, and it was quite an honor to meet him. Jason Pearson, who was at Motor City last year, and I was lucky enough...
2 years ago?
Yeah, there's about to be a slap fight.
All right, so I've been drinking a lot. Yeah. Leave me alone. I've been following your lead. So,
yeah. I will tell a very, very embarrassing Jason Pearson story.
All right.
So I walk up to him 2 years ago at Motor City, and the only reason I remember is because we did not have our booth two years ago. We had it last year.
Okay.
Year prior. And I walk up, and I had a few X-Men comics of his that I wanted signed. And I walk up, and I was like, and he lays them out, and he's like, and I lay them out, and he goes, oh, man, he goes, you know what, he goes, this is one of my favorite covers. And I go, that's a great one. I go, but actually, I go, out of these, you know, I had like, I don't know, 4 or 5 comics, I go, that's my favorite. He goes, yeah, I didn't do that cover.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, my God. I am such an asshole.
And my boot tastes so good right now.
I'm an asshole. Yo.
Yeah. It was one of those instances like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a big fucking 1957 Chevy. He goes, with a baby skin, like
hubcaps. Whales.
Yeah.
Yes, I hear you.
It was terrible. So, terrible. I am an asshole. You know, I fuck up. I'm not going to lie. So
it happens to all of us, right?
Yeah. Oh, we have another McKay joining. The fucking McKay.
Fucking McKees.
What are we doing? Is it accents now?
Well, accent, fuck that. We're all just talking normally.
It's true.
You gotta fucking speak up, man.
Oh, this is so satisfying for me.
There we go.
It's not Scottish, it's crap.
So Jason, this is really going nowhere.
But yeah, wow.
You're still on influences from 20 minutes
ago. Yeah, okay, no, so my influences is
welcome
Jason
to 37
Pearson,
hours
who has
of editing, is what we're looking at.
Dude, we don't edit shit. Did we not already have this conversation earlier today?
All this shit is still running from the moment we
hit. Outstanding.
Yeah. But no, Jason Pearson, who I was lucky enough to meet a couple years ago at Motor City. Scotty Young, who I've met a couple times.
Did you insult him like I did?
I did not insult him. No, it was actually, he was really cool to meet. And he was a very humble guy. Scotty Young, pretty much the same way. I met Umber.
Ramos.
Say again?
Ramos.
I met Ramos at a...
How did you know?
I know. It's like I'm fucking a clairvoyant.
Fucking psychic, right? I met Ramos.
I always have.
I almost want to start doing something about totally different so we can get back to the question where we hear all these names over one more time.
I can't wait.
All right, so people, going back to the point, I have a graffiti style, which is very exaggerated and cartoony. You know, it's big hands, big feet like Ramos, but it's very expressionist like Ramos and Pearson, and then I tend to pull in a lot of the ink work that Chris Pacello does. You know, big, heavy outlines and... Yeah.
But do you like Scotty Young?
Yes. Are you kidding me? Scotty Young,
do you like him or do you like him?
Well, you know, he's a little too fuzzy for me to like him. But I'm not going to say he's not man pretty.
Scotty sent him a note. Do you like me? Yes or no?
Check one.
Jason wrote in the baby box. Exactly.
Exactly. He was a baby. So.
I hope to God Scotty hears this.
I don't.
Well, you know, here's the great thing. We're going to talk to Scotty tomorrow, and we're going to put this interview on the same fucking podcast.
Frack me, I'm screwed. Okay, great. That's awesome. Scotty, I'm sorry. I really hope you don't F up my Huntress pick that I got, you know, commissioned from you.
Oh, nice. Huntress?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huntress, nice. One of my favorite characters from the Batman universe,
she's
for sure.
Badass. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She actually kills people. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Jason, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yuvariart.com.
Okay,
wait.
Let's spell this because I fucked up how to say it.
No, it's Hungarian. We spell everything normally. It's UJ because that makes sense. UJVARI -.com.
Yep.
And I'm on Yuvariart.com or Yuvariart on Facebook.
Twitters.
Twitters as well. Yuvariart. All one word.
At
Twitter as well. Yeah, thank you. At UvariArt.com, where I will be posting the most random crap you will ever hear. I'm on board with a lot of people who do both video games, comic books, movies, all over the place. So If you start following me on Twitter, I'm not going to promise that it's going to make any sense. It's going to be very non-sequitur stuff.
Dude, Twitter is Game of Thrones for the internet. It's 140 characters with no fucking clue what the hell's
Amen
going on.
Amen to that. Thank you very much.
But here's
ADD for the internet. It's like, yes, I can follow this, but I don't. It's great.
But here's the great thing about Jason on Twitter. If you follow him and you talk to him, he talks to you back.
Wait, I'm just a cousin that doesn't make sense. I talk to him. It's like, oh, he's nice, okay, but it just, maybe he should be in a home. I'm not sure.
So it's what you should expect out of a man wearing a kilt and a beret.
Well, and
go! Time out. I gotta stop right now.
That's a cheese.
This is not a beret.
That is a cheese this, cut up.
This is a galley cap.
It's a Donegal cap.
Yep.
Turned backwards.
If which makes it look like a beret.
But it's exactly what Sam Jackson wears. So if you're going to tell what the baddest mother effer in the universe wears is a beret, which is French, which means I give up on everything.
Newsflash, no. White bearded man in a kilt. You're not Samuel L. Jackson.
All right. Whoa. Time out.
No, wait.
I am not just white. I make Casper look tan.
Yeah. Dude,
all right?
You have... You guys have not yet met Kevin from our podcast, who this motherfucker is translucent.
I did not see him. I'm sorry.
It's because he's shirtless.
I thought it was a bunch of clothes hanging up on a hanger.
I thought it was a prop.
All right, guys.
The Invisible Man. That's what I thought it was.
Listen to every episode of this show. When people hear this show, they're going to be like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, guys, we need to wrap up right now, but we just want to know one thing. What is your art style? What is your influence?
His influence is liquor and men in skirts. All right, that's it. Cheers, guys.
Yay! Slancho, my friends.
So the Motor City Comic Con after party continues, and we are here with the one, the only, Cosmic Casey.
Hello.
What? You drew a crowd. This shit's impressive as fuck. So Cosmic Casey.
Yes.
Or can I just call you Casey?
You may call me whatever you like. Just not late for dinner, baby.
No, you were on time. You beat us there. Yeah. So, Casey, what exactly? We have fucking paparazzi now? What the fuck?
Taking pictures. Sorry.
So Casey, tell people about who you are. I mean, I know there's only like
four or five people that don't know you. But okay.
Who am I?
So anyway, I started as a media outlet for indie comics, doing comic reviews, album reviews. I wrote my own original sci-fi, and then that turned into something bigger. And now I have just signed a book deal with Rocket Inc. Studios, and I will have a horror anthology coming out at the beginning of 2015. So I'm very excited about that.
That is insane, really.
And she's hot.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We're gonna.
I know.
Yeah, Casey, we're not going to ask you about who your influences are, because last time we did that, that went terribly, terribly wrong.
Not my fault!
Were you asked me that before? Was I wasted?
No.
I blame the peanut gallery.
Our previous guest, who still may be here. Maybe, we don't know.
Maybe but, not.
So, okay, so how the fuck did you become the fun, loving nerd that you are?
How did I become that way?
Yeah.
Dude, that all stems back from my dad. I'm total daddy's girl. And we grew up on Romero films, Creepshow, Planet of the Apes. I mean, Coast to Coast, George Nuri. I mean, that's how I grew up. So,
oh, dude, George Nuri, man. I used to. Well, see, you're quite a bit younger than I am, and I am the official old fart of the podcast.
How old am I? Do you know how old I am?
24, maybe.
Nope.
That's close enough.
No.
Are you older?
Yeah.
Oh, good enough. Yeah, we'll go with 24.
Well, how old are you, sir?
Damn it.
Do you know how long ago the dinosaurs were around? Times that by 10.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. I had.
Remember when Alexander Graham Bell invented that thing?
I just talked to Scotty.
Oh, see, now we got Jay from Nelget Weapon coming back.
He's listening.
Wait,
for
did you
sure.
Say we were waiting for Jay? Like,
he said, though, he goes,
what's that?
You know what? Here's
you
what he
say
said.
We were waiting
though.
For
goes,
Jay,
I can't
and then...
wait to hear it because everybody gets inspired by something. So it's awesome.
I just went out to dinner with this man. He's awesome.
Yeah, you also went out to dinner with us. I don't remember you talking about that.
Nothing at all, dude. Nothing at all.
I'm drinking.
Perfect.
Oh my God, we're potting again.
All right, so yeah, we've been potting.
I apologize.
Yeah, my fucking interview, man. Fuck.
Well, Jesus, man. Fuck.
Dude, just so, call
my
me Jay.
First,
Jesus
my first interview is going to include
sorry,
the word fuck several times.
It's on drunk on fucking comics. All right, so Casey.
On Twitter at the _ Jedi _ Ross, as in Ross.
I would like to interject right now that this is not the Elegant Weapon interview.
Oh, I apologize. Although I'm seriously considering flicking my bick right now.
Flick
just
my
cuddle
bick?
With me right now. Just cuddle with
this,
me.
This, okay. This is the comic.
I'm
going
to scratch it like a DJ while you're doing that.
All right.
So.
Hot.
Casey, what so far this weekend has been your highlight?
Oh, my highlight of this weekend. Right, you know what the highlight was? Is when I saw Bob Camp and I went up to him to say, you know, how's your shoulder? I helped you out in Indiana because I'm a massage therapist as well. That's my day job.
What?
And I said, how's your shoulder? And before I could get the words out, he said, Casey. And I was like, hot damn, you remember who I was. So yeah. That to me, that just lit up my world when Bob Camp remembered who I was.
We actually just interviewed Bob here a little while ago tonight. And yeah. One of the major highlights
of
my weekend.
He's so damn sweet.
Oh my God.
He's so sweet.
Just amazing. I could talk to that man for days and not even take a piss break. All right, so Casey, where can people go follow you and irritate you online?
Oh, you can find me at CosmicCasey.com. My Twitter handle is at CosmicCasey. That's Cosmic with a K, Casey with a K. And you can find me at Facebook.com/CosmicCasey.com.
Awesome. Well, go check her out. You know, virtually poker with a stick. Not in person. She hits really
hard.
It
better be a pretty big stick, you know.
Yeah,
I'm picky.
I thought the stick was big enough, but she still hit me.
Hey, there's a reason I wear a kilt.
I know that word.
Because it doesn't hang low. We covered this.
To the left! That's all I'm saying!
It's really cold! All right, guys, that's it for the Cosmic Casey interview.
Thank you so much, dude. I really appreciate being right. on your show. That's awesome.
Thanks,
thank
Casey.
You.
We love you. Listeners, go listen to her. You're going to love her, too. We'll see
you. Thank you.
All right, it is nearing the very tail end of the after party here at Motor City Comic Con. And myself and Jay from An Elegant Weapon are sitting here talking to Mr. Billy Zabka.
That's right.
How's it going, Billy?
What's up, boys? Right by the fire where we met two nights ago.
Yeah, it's unseasonably cold here in Michigan.
That's why I'm wearing my Oakley winter ski jacket. Sorry to bring you out to the fire again.
No, this is great. Yeah. And Tony is actually joining us now as well.
No, so, I've been here the entire time, just silent.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
just like, on cue.
I've got to say this because people that listen to our show know we're primarily comics, and I am a massive comic book fan. When it comes to conventions, I'm not a big media guest fan. It's like, I'm like, oh, that's cool, they're here.
Right.
So, when I found out you were coming, I may or may not have squealed a little bit like a little girl because Karate Kid is one of the most iconic movies of all time. Yeah. All time. You were fantastic in it. You know, so... Now, you did that. You did just one of the guys. You were the epitome of the asshole.
Right. They call me the quintessential 80s bad guy.
Yeah.
But I prefer it the misunderstood good guy.
Ooh. Okay, elaborate.
Right. No, that's a long story. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, it's just fantastic. So, but since the movies that the majority of people probably know you from, you've done some acting, but you've done a lot of directing as well.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
Well, I started out wanting to be a filmmaker. Like, being an actor was secondary to what I wanted to do. Like, when I left high school, I didn't go to acting school. I went to film school, so I wanted to be a director.
Where did you go to film school?
I went to Cal State Northridge for my first semester, and then halfway through that semester, I was auditioning for The Karate Kid, and I got pulled out, and the next thing, I'm in a movie, and then the movie does really well, and then suddenly I'm like, and I keep going back to film school, and then I get pulled out for Just One of the Guys, and I go to film school and get pulled out for Back to School, and then I got on a show called The Equalizer, and so I became an actor by default, and then I'm like, well, I love acting just as much. It's not that I didn't love acting just as much, but I don't know. I've been making 8mm films since I was 10 years old.
Really?
Awesome. Yeah. So I end up like being in them and making them, cutting them, and splicing them. And
you were on Equalizer?
Yeah, I was the son of the Equalizer. Yeah. 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 For the whole season, all four seasons, I was in the first episode and the last episode.
Awesome.
That was great. Yeah, and I worked with amazing actors and everything. So I kind of got like my film school was, you know, by osmosis, working with these amazing actors and amazing directors and really great scripts and everything. And I kind of didn't give up on my filmmaking dreams, but I just that was the road I was on.
Well, and it's got to be a great experience being on that side of the camera, seeing how it works, you know, like being able to, there's nothing better than a class that's hands-on, at least being able to witness.
Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, the stuff, like, when I would go back to school, like, I mean, I was, like, way beyond my instructors, you know, and, like, you know, and they what they were teaching, like, I was experiencing it, like, they're dealing with little 16mm cameras, I'm shooting 35 and really big lights, and so it was, like, I had already experienced the bigger feeling and everything, so, but, yeah, it was, I always wanted to be, you know, behind the camera more, but I became an actor, and then that became, like, you know, I went on that ride. I was 19, you know, Karate Kid. I was 18, back to school, 1920. Wow. So, you know, in those days, and they're flying me around, you know, to all these, like, you know, Daytona Beach for spring break, and I'm hosting an MTV and, like, you know, getting up in front of the crowds and live that life for a while.
That had to be fun, though. I mean,
come on, man. I mean, flying to Daytona Beach when you're 19 years old, and I was picked up by a Hawaiian Tropic van, you know, with, like, all the, you know, and ended up falling in love with a girl for a couple years, and, like, that whole route, you know.
But was it ever tricky, like, you hear celebs nowadays, you know, when they're young kids, and then they kind of get, you know, how it is with certain teen actors and this and
it's
that?
It's a different world now, man, with the internet, man. Like, when I was there, it was like kind of a private thing in a weird way. Like, you know, there wasn't the internet, first of all. You know, if anything, you were showed up in a little magazine here or there, and you'd go and check the racks for, if you made Teen Beat this month or something, you know, which we so all good. Did, sadly.
Tiger
like, yeah, like, you know, and I have so many cheesy, like, pullouts and, like, stuff. Like, I mean, stuff that's haunting me now on eBay right now,
dude,
you know.
Now you're actually making me a little bit upset that I didn't, like, go fucking, like, look some of that shit up and walk in and go, dude, sign this.
No, yeah. Hey, you know what? It happens, you know, so. But that was a season, you know, and then I kind of went and I did a bunch of stuff, and then I'll tell you what, I was in the Virgin Islands for, like, 2 months doing a movie of the week for ABC. It's a really cool movie of the week about the Tosha, which is the Spanish galleon that crashed off the Florida Keys with $400 million worth of gold.
Oh,
and a family that looked for it for 17 years, and they lost one of their kids along the way. And they found the money, and they got to keep it, $400 million. So I played one of the kids on the boat, and we filmed it in the Virgin Islands. And I was there for a couple months and trained how to scuba dive. And, you know, I was out on these cool boats with, like, these, you know, they called mailboxes, which were, like, these vents that the propeller would push the sand down and move the thing away, and I was learning all this stuff. But I remember being out on a boat and every night having swordfish, and like, you know, I'm like, you know, a little mid-20s, and I see a little rubber dinghy with a bunch of, like, Navy SEALs going out to their boat, and I remember looking at them thinking, wow, those guys are doing something with their lives. Like, I'm a puppet, I'm just doing these parts, and I'm, you know, it's like I felt really unfulfilled. And after that, I literally kind of came back. I was right at, like, breaking. Like, I had all these offers. I had all these different things going on. And I decided to go into music school. And I actually play guitar. And, like, I took a whole nother route. I went to Dick Grove School of Music. I grew my hair long. I drove a Jeep. And I went and I graduated guitar school for a couple years and blew off my whole career. And I was fulfilled. And I was totally happy. It was a kind of a searching thing, I think, you know, like, going from 20s. A teen thing. Yeah. So. You know, it's just been a crazy ride.
Well, it's got to be one of those things, you know. It's like when you're 18, 19 years old, you get pulled into that. You kind of miss out on that growing up college experience that a lot of other people did, and you had to have that moment to figure out what you wanted to do, where you wanted to be.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah, my college experience was literally on the set of Back to School in Madison, Wisconsin, as you know, not having to study but getting to go to the parties. You know, I miss that. You know what I mean?
Like, you got to touch on being on a set like that with actors like that.
Oh, that was just epic. Like, of all the movies, now Karate Kid, of course, is sentimentally my favorite because it was my first and it's an iconic film, and so is Back to School in its own way, but. If, like, I had to just watch a movie, like, I'd probably pull it Back to School. Like, it's just the cast of that. It's so funny.
Two primary reasons, Rodney Dangerfield and Sam Kinison. I mean, my God, two of the most like genius minds of the comedic world of all time.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean that had to be fantastic.
I met Rodney in an elevator in Madison after I got there and with my suitcase, getting off his plane, getting to the hotel, and he's in an elevator in his robe and his hair's sticking up. His eyes are all baggy, you know. And I'm like, "Hey, Rodney, I'm Billy Zabka. I'm playing jazz." He goes, "Yeah, yeah. How you doing? How you doing? What are you doing in your robe?" He goes, "Oh, I got to get to the sauna. I got to get the pot out of my lungs." He goes, "You're young. You can handle it." You know, like that's how I met him. You know, and he was just always like that. Man.
Oh,
he's just
goodness.
He was funny, like from go. Like, yeah, I mean, come on. Like, he had an audience. You know, he was just great.
Couldn't help it.
That guy seems like he was always on. Always
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And it's just like, you know, I always imagine that one moment of like randomly running into Rodney and just hearing him do that the line going, "Yo, baby, you want to learn $9 the hard way?" You know? Like, you know,
just, right, right, right.
Just that's kind of how I've always imagined him. I don't want to imagine him any other way.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
Now, one of the things that you've been most recently on is How I Met Your Mother, guest starring on that. How was that?
Playing yourself.
Yeah. That was totally, totally like, I'm still, like, being at this show, how many kids are coming up to me knowing my name. Like, kids, you know, 14, 15 years old, like, you're Billy Zabka. Like, that's never happened. Sounds good. All right. We're about to turn off the fireplace in a 15 minutes.
I think the after party's getting canceled.
Did you watch the show up until then?
You know, I'd seen pieces of it, but I didn't watch much television, to be honest, at all. I just don't get into series and stuff. Like, The Office I got into for a while, but, like, no, I wasn't a big fan of the show, but when it was on, I'd watch it. It was great. They called me out of the blue.
How did they pitch that idea to you? Because obviously for Barney's bachelor party,
yeah.
How amazing that was, and really how amazing that was watching it as a viewer.
Yeah.
Being like, holy shit, that was badass.
Yeah, they told me they wanted me to be on the show. They called me directly, and I was excited, and then they sent me the script, and then I'm the clown. And the funny thing about the clown is the clown has no lines, you know, he's a clown. So I'm like, all right, I'm the clown. Where do I speak in this thing? And I'm turning the pages. And then at the very end is when he says, "Well, thanks for bringing Ralph Macchio, but he ain't the Karate Kid." And then there's a speech that I have. I'm like, oh, there's my speech. So I'm coming out of a clown hat, you know, wig, and I've got my headband on, and I'm saying, you know, finally somebody gets it kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, so that's the gag, you know, and that's where it's going to end. So I thought it was great. So I said, of course I'm going to do it. And I didn't think Ralph would do it because they kind of like slam Ralph the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
And then Ralph and I were talking. I'm like, are you going to do this? He goes, well, I talked to him, and they're going to try to make my character like Barney, and like, it's going to be funny. And so he was in. So I'm like, cool. And it was really nice of Ralph to do that because he really took a lot of, you know, hits from the Barney character.
That's,
you know,
kind of what Barney did for himself, Neil Patrick Harris, in the Harold and Kumar movies.
Yeah.
Playing this, you know, altered,
version of himself. Yeah,
himself.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know, but I thought that was it for me. Like, you know, I was going to take off my wig, I was going to go up and do my, like, ki, and they're going to leave me hanging with half clown makeup on and my gi, and that was the joke, and that was it. But, you know, one thing I did was I took it really seriously, and I went online to YouTube and watched Ringling Brothers Clown School. And, like, actually learned how to be a clown. So, like, showed up on the set animated and alive like a clown. And they were, like, I think they took notice of that. And then saw that I had some comic chops. And really, in a safe way, by them getting me on the show as a clown, I couldn't really screw up too bad. You know what I mean? So, it's like, they didn't interview me and see if I could act still. They're just like, you know, you're a clown. So, how, you know. But I had fun with it. You know, and the next thing I knew, the feedback was great from their fans. And then they're like, okay, we're booking you for another one, and then it turned into like, you know, 9 in the final season. You know?
So are you more of a method actor then, or?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if
I mean,
I'm a method actor.
I know that's not your primary passion. I know being behind the camera is more.
Well,
but
yeah, but no, I'm an actor. I mean, I take it seriously. Yeah, I don't know if I'm a method actor. I mean, you're playing yourself, so that's like how much more method? How method you have to be to play yourself? You know, but it was like a twisted version of you, so it's kind of like fun. It was crazy though. It's like I don't know if I'm a method actor, but I take my research seriously, you know. Like, if I'm going to play a clown, I want to know what a clown would do, and,
yeah,
you know, so I do
well,
research.
Well, that makes me wonder, like, because being such a part of, like, an 80s iconic thing.
Yeah.
Does it skew being a teenager at that time and having the nostalgia that kind of, you know, the rest of us would have about other things? Like, you look back on the 80s, not just Karate Kid,
yeah,
but all the other things that we loved about the 80s.
Right, right.
Did that skew that for you at all? But you feel like part of the 80s, you know, kids, that you loved all the stuff that happened then?
Yeah, yeah. You mean, like, you mean skew, like, the future, or what do you mean?
Well, no, like, I mean, it must be weird to be a part of something where, like, you know, all the things we were into in the 80s, whether it was the great cartoons and all the, especially the movies, right?
Right.
Like,
the movies, the Spielberg, music, the era, whole nine yards, yeah.
And we got to just be pure fans of that. You
right,
know, no
right.
involvement, no understanding, nothing behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Does being part of that iconicness screw, like,
no,
skew
no,
other stuff?
No, because yeah. the funny thing is, I
you
feel
don't
like
look at it different.
No, because I was a fan of that too, like Pretty in Pink and Say Anything,
yes,
and
yeah.
like Ferris Bueller and, you know, Top Gun and all that stuff. Like, I was a fan of, and I felt like a total imposter when I would show up on screen. Like, what am I doing there?
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'd feel like a total imposter. Like, I hope nobody knows I'm not really, you know.
Oh.
I don't belong there.
Was there ever a role that you tried out for that you really wanted? That
oh,
just
dude, so many, dude. So many.
Are there any that you were close on that you didn't
so
get
many.
That you can actually
Well,
talk
here's
about?
One that really... I'm still to this day bummed about it, but Hot Tub Time Machine made up for it.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was, you know, when I got offered Just One of the Guys, and I was... it was with Columbia who did Karate Kid, so they kind of just gave me the movie. And now I'm locked down in contract. I have to go to Arizona and do this movie. At the same time, after I sign the contracts, I get an offer from Better Off Dead. And I'm like,
wow.
And I'm like, I want to go to skiing, man. And it wasn't about, like, what character I want to play, because they were both jerks. One was just in a ski outfit. The other was, like, lifting tables. But I'm like, I want to be in the lodge. I want to go skiing with these guys, you know. And I didn't know these you know, who they all were at that time.
Dude, Better Off Dead, that's one of my all-time favorites. We talked to Curtis Armstrong last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's
yeah,
great.
He is fantastic. I mean, that...
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
you know, and it's funny because you were that, and I'm sorry if it's cliche, but you
that's
were
the way
you,
it is, man. It's like it's
yeah,
all good.
You were such a good bad asshole
bully.
Yeah.
You were that quintessential '80s bully.
I actually think I would have liked you better in that movie. Now that I'm thinking about, I'm just gonna go back and watch it, and I'm gonna visualize you.
Right. Oh yeah, I really wanted to. But what was fun was when Hot Tub called me out of the blue. They had filmed the movie all the way through, and then they had a little dip in the middle where they wanted to punch up some laughs, and they just called me out of the blue, and they're like, you know, you want to be in a John Cusack movie? I'm like, well, it's, you know, and then I'm like, cool. So then I went to MGM, and they showed me the rough cut, and it was really funny. Steve Pink, the director, and, like, all the people. And
that movie
so
was great.
In. So it was this little cameo in it, but it was kind of like, when I was on set, I felt like, this is kind of like my makeup for missing Better Off Dead. I'm in a ski movie with John Cusack. You know what I mean? So. Yeah.
Okay, now, this is totally off the wall, but
Sorry, I'm surprised he did that movie. When Hot
Cusack?
I was really surprised that he was able to... Not that I don't think he's... I probably think he's a great guy, but he seems like a pretty serious actor
yeah.
with a lot of the movies he's been doing the past couple decades and
sure,
stuff.
Sure,
and then when he did Hot Tub Time Machine, A, it's a comedy that
yeah.
he hasn't done in years.
Right.
And I was really surprised that he
yeah.
actually took that on.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's
he that, took it on big time. I mean, he was a producer
yeah.
on that, too. So he was...
Oh,
yeah? He was, like, really into the dialogue and, like... He was
well, it's
all
cool
over.
That it shows he appreciates his own nostalgia.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I'm sure
yeah.
he got paid pretty well, too, for that. I'm sure that didn't have anything to do with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so this is a weird oddball question, but when I heard you were coming, I'm like sitting there going, okay, I'm getting Billy to sign something for me, you know, because I'm a big fan. And I'm like, do I just want to do a normal, you know, buy the picture? What do I want to do? I want to bring something in. And all of a sudden, like at the last minute, I thought about it. I didn't have time, but I'm like, I want to go find an old shitty 80s boombox, smash it in with like
that would be
you know,
original,
and,
man.
And have you signed it? Have you had anybody bring up something really weird
yeah,
for you to sign? I know you don't do a lot of cons.
I did one, and I don't know even where I was taken, but some they the guys that run these shows, you know, they kind of just like. They got game going on that you don't even know about when you're an artist, you know, and it's like, hey, there's a fan, a really big fan, and he's got so much stuff, it's in a room. And I get pulled into this room, and it's like everything vintage, like Cobra Kai belts and hat, like things I never even knew existed. Like it was just like a Cobra Kai dog, you know. And they pay me for being in the room, and I sign everything. But it was like, I don't even remember what it was, but it was like stuff I'd never seen, like crazy stuff.
Oh, that's
yeah,
neat.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So I don't know. I think the weirdest things is like dolls, you know, that come up, or like, you know, maybe an Atari game, like the Karate Kid Atari game.
Yeah.
Like that.
There was a Karate Kid Atari
game? Yeah, yeah. And I never show up and you can't win. Like, you can't win. It's like, just Daniel just fighting through bricks and stuff. And I don't even think Miyagi's in it. It's so bad. It's like one of the worst games of all time. In fact, somebody played it. It's like, I don't know how many hours he said he did spend on it, but like, he finally finished it to prove that you can finish it, and he was just so disappointed and mad, and he wrote this huge thing about it.
Well, so, since we are drunk on comics,
yes.
Two-part question. One, do you read comics?
Ooh, actually, that's actually going to lean into a better question, Tony, because I don't know if you were here the other night. We talked about Karate Kid was actually based on a comic.
And we found it today.
Did you find it?
Yeah, and that's the thing, yeah. Well, to answer your question, yeah, when I was a kid, I read a lot of comics. I don't know the Rolodex like you guys do. I love comics, like I appreciate that. I love like Marvel's doing, I love all the movies. I'd love to be in a Marvel movie or a comic movie. I think it's great.
You hearing that, Marvel?
Marvel, please call, yes. No.
But hey, there's nothing wrong with maybe showing up in a DC movie too.
Or DC, you know. Like whatever. But but Karate Kid was originally a comic strip that was found by, I believe how the story goes, and Jerry Weintraub, who produced Karate Kid, found the comic strip and thought of it as an idea and then got a writer on it, and then it kind of grew from that. But we looked at it today, and the guy that actually runs the show tracked down a guy that works here that has the original set, and we bought him today.
Like that is awesome.
The original 11.
You and Martin, wow. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Martin Cove, who played your sensei in the movie. Yeah. Yeah, which we had a chance to just talk to, like, you know, over smokes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
and then second part to that, since we're the drunk part on Drunk on Comics, what's your go-to drink?
Well, my go-to drink is seltzer water right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you're picking the alcohol.
But if I'm going to have alcohol.
Jack and Coke?
It's been Jack and Coke, yeah. You know, a little bit, but I'm not a drinker, so.
Yeah.
If I'm going to have a go-to drink, it's, you know, something
it's
light.
It's a joint.
I kind of had to twist your arm a little bit. But you did allow me to buy you one drink, so
there you go. Yes, you had to twist my arm a little bit. Yes, yes, indeed.
Maybe more than a little bit.
Right.
You know, hey, you know, okay. So now, here's the oddball question, because I was talking to somebody about Karate Kid the other day because we were talking about the fact that you were going to be here, and can you explain to me how when, you know, Ralph's character Daniel kicks you in the head at the end, how is that considered a point? Because they clearly say. No headshots.
You know what? The music, the emotion of that has everybody snowed for 30 years. And I think like Barney Stinson woke up to that and said, like the writers of How I Met Your Mother, you know, they're like, they like did the math on that and said, wait, you know.
I didn't
until
catch
that,
it.
I never thought of it.
I didn't catch it until like a
tell
week
you what,
ago.
I tell you what, for 15 years, I couldn't watch that movie without feeling the kick emotionally the way I felt it when we filmed it. And I couldn't see the film objectively because I would still see it through my point of view.
Wow.
Even to the end, even when I hand him the trophy at the end. I mean, I could not experience that movie like you guys did until now where I watch it and I feel completely detached from myself. And then I'm like, yeah, that guy's a jerk, man, you know. Like, you know? But like, you know, in that time as an actor, you're trying to find, look, you don't want to just play an evil guy. Anybody, you don't want to just play a mean guy. You want to give somebody dimension, especially if you're not really that kind of person. So like for me to be able to justify playing this character, I had to hang on to the one thing in the script was when I hand him the trophy at the end. I'm like, oh, there's redemption in him.
You know,
now, actually, I didn't say that consciously, but subconsciously I knew that. I dialed into that. So
for me, the turning point was literally when, you know, when your sensei, John Kreese, character, says to you, sweep the leg, and you look at him, and your eyes dart left and right.
Yeah.
And that was that moment right there.
Totally.
Was, you're like, what? And that was where, that was some of the most beautiful acting. Like, looking back, you know, as an adult, back then I was like, he's not sure, but as an adult, looking back and having gone through film and video school, I don't know if that was directed to you or if that was something that you did on your own.
That was a real response to him. And the way I met Marty was as Kreese. So I don't know, like, I know Marty now as Marty. He's a teddy bear. But he was introduced to me in a gi with a black belt on. And the only way I ever saw him was in a dojo when he was barking at us. And I had no relationship with him outside of him being Sensei Kreese. Wow. And so when that scene happened and he did that line to me, the way he delivered to me, and he was so intense about it, I was really trying to read him as Marty, as an actor, as a sensei, like the whole thing. So that was just an organic reaction. There was no directing. There was no direction at all in that. I remember shooting that, and it was like almost nobody was there. Like the fans were all gone. That was like everybody's at lunch, and they pulled us to a corner and put some people in the stands, and they shot that little piece and moved on. But the way they cut it together, it's part of the organism of that.
And as somebody watching, it was uncomfortable because. That's the first time where you actually, for me as a viewer, feel for Johnny's character.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and that's one of those things where I sit there and look back at it, and I'm like, my God.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, but that is such, like I said, it's an iconic film. And we talked about it, you know, everything from the characters in the movie, but the soundtrack itself is its character in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So. Well, like the essence of the 80s are in the DNA of that movie.
Yeah.
So, and there was a simpler, purer time in that time. And there was like a, there was just a little bit more, you know, the music was different, the kind of music that was being made, the wardrobe, the attitudes.
What I really identified with was actually something that was big. It's been fixed kind of in society, at least where I come from in Canada, but I was a single kid. I was a kid with a single mom. Mm. And the whole story of Danny and his mom and moving and just them two fighting. And that actually was a big thing in the 80s. There was a lot of those stories where it was single mothers was a big thing in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I really, really identified with that.
Wow.
And that was something I got out of this kid who didn't have a father
because
I never had a dad and didn't have this male, you know, thing. And that's what really clicked me into the movie was them building this relationship, you know? So
that's beautiful. And that's why the movie works so well. I mean, that whole relationship thing, and then the movie at the end isn't even just about Daniel. It's about all the kids. It's about, you know, it's everybody's delivered. Johnny's delivered. The Cobra Kai's are delivered. The only person still left holding the torch is Kreese, who gets it in the first act of the second movie. But it's like, you know, it's well, kind of like, you know, if the bad guys just fell and they just got beat, but it was like, it was just everybody's human and had dimension.
Yeah, and it's almost time. Like everyone gets their redemption at the end. You know, even Miyagi, he gets that final fulfillment,
right.
know, in there.
What are you guys talking about? Yeah. I apologize.
So, now, quick question for you. I mean, we'll let you go here because we've been rabbling on for
a
while.
No worries.
So, what are you working on right now? I mean, like, what do you want to tell people about that you're working on so they can come, you know, see what you're doing? I mean, do you have anything directing-wise going on?
Yeah. I'm directing a lot of stuff. I direct commercials. You know, I direct music videos. So, mm-hmm. I've got a bunch of those lined up for good artists and good commercials and stuff. On the directing side, I'm developing a television show. I'm writing a movie. That I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but that's going to be fun. And then it's pilot season right now, so I'm up for a bunch of TV shows and stuff like that. How I Met Your Mother was great. It kind of put me back out there on the map, and so I got a lot of casting people calling me. Just did a film called Produce that's going to be out soon.
Nice.
About a kid with Down syndrome, and I play his alcoholic dad. Not his alcoholic dad, but an alcoholic dad. It's a really kind of deep, cool movie. So I don't know. I mean, really, where I'm at is where I started. And that's like, I went to college to be a filmmaker and my life took this crazy ride. And it's just that grown up now, you know. I just have a lot behind me. And so I don't know what's coming next, you know.
It's exciting, though, eh?
You never know. Yeah, it's all good. You know, it's all, like, the journey is the destination. It's not like, you know, made it here, I made it there. Like, you made it now, right here. It's like, it's about this moment. It's not about anything more than that. Yeah. And take that all the way. And I don't listen to praise and I don't listen to critics. It's like, it's all good. I get it. I love the fans. That's why I come here, because I, you know, met so many guys that have like got their black belts from the movie and that are like cops now, and like even the guy that's the head of security here like trains the military. He's got a Cobra Kai tattoo on his calf.
Is that Frank?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Check out his calf, man.
Frank's always so well dressed, man.
Yeah. Have him pull up his left leg, dude. He's got a big old Cobra Kai tat on there. Yeah. So it's like, it's cool, man, that you can do something in your life that like ripples and touches people. And you know, I'm a people person at first. I'm an artist, and like it's about that. It's not about anything more than that. And what it's really about for me is my family. I got two beautiful kids and a beautiful wife, and awesome. That's a son. And
are they old enough that they've seen it yet?
No, and he won't see it for a while. He's 4 and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he gets it. He's seen clips of it. In fact, the other day, he puts a black headband on. No kidding.
Ooh.
And starts doing it. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, yeah, I'm doing karate. That's what you do with these. I'm like, how do you know that? You know, and he never saw it with me, but maybe his babysitter clicked through a channel. Or like, I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. I mean, he's old enough to process his dad in a skeleton outfit. He'll see that film.
That's awesome. Okay, before I let Gus go on an elegant weapon, I always have to get their last opinion.
All right.
Of the six, what's your favorite Star Wars movie?
My favorite Star Wars movie of the six.
Even if you're not a fan, I make them answer this question.
Oh, that's a hard question, though.
It's a terrible question.
Unless you can say to me, well, it's...
What's the one... All right, what's
even the, of the first three, did you like the original? Did you like Jedi?
Of the Star Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars.
Sorry, man, I went to Star Trek. Oh.
No,
of the Star Trek. No. I was
that's a whole other podcast.
I know,
someone
sorry,
else
guys.
Doing.
I don't mean to insult you. You can
okay.
Delete that.
That's
the first one.
Yeah.
No,
the very original.
Right. The original one.
All right, cool.
Flat out, yeah.
That's it. You don't even need to explain it. It's just the last question I always ask.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure the first one. And right. It also has to do with where I was. It was my first drive-in movie theater experience with my parents.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing.
So, I mean, it wasn't just the movie. And that's, I think, what people, like, remember a movie. They're not just remembering the movie. They're remembering who they were with, where they were, and that moment of time. And that's what captures. That's what music does, and that's what good film does. And so for me, because of that, that's
awesome,
no doubt.
Thanks so much, man.
Hey guys, you guys rock.
For our listeners, is there any place that they could possibly listen to you, reach you, get a hold of you, such as Twitter, Facebook?
Yeah, Twitter. I'm just at William Zapka on Twitter. You know, if you're nice and you tweet me nice, I'll follow you, and we can DM.
Yeah,
hey, you know what I mean.
I tell you what, Billy. I gotta say, I mean, we've met so many people over the years. You know, as fans and as our podcast. You are one of the nicest people we've ever met.
Hands down.
I got to thank you. I mean, it's actually been a pleasure hanging out with you throughout this entire
weekend. We've had a blast, man. The podcast is secondary to that, man. If you didn't have these in your hand, we'd be rapping the same way. It's just cool that you get to share this with your peeps.
That's what
your
we
peeps,
love about
you know?
Doing this, right?
Well, we were talking about it, you know, earlier. It's like, you know what? If we don't get to interview Billy, we aren't going to be disappointed. Yeah, our fans like
to you,
but
yeah,
you know, because they're missing out. But yeah, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure. So
absolutely. Well, I'm glad we did this now because I know tomorrow's gonna be crazy. I got to get out of town and
like
you don't want to rush this. Like
we
were by
man.
A fire. It's cool, you know.
Yeah.
We're all drunk. No, not really.
No. Well, I was earlier. I'm not gonna lie, but you know, I'm starting to sober
up. I'm mellowing out too a
little bit. But Billy, all the best to you.
Thanks,
guys. So much.
You too, man. I'll be looking for you, man. I'm glad to meet you, boys.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Wow, that was a wild night. That was some memories right there.
Memories that I'm just now getting to enjoy.
Yes, once again, we want to thank Motor City Comic Con for allowing us to be there, to putting us up to be able to do interviews, not only on the show floor, but at the after party.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a really, really awesome time. You know, I mean, just, you know, the fact that they helped us out in so many ways, just, you know, not only in helping us to promote, but like, I mean, they've become part of our family and hopefully we become part of theirs. And it's something that I know I really, really appreciate everything they've done. So Motor City, you guys are awesome. Miriam, Michael, the whole crew there. Thank you so much. So I think that does it.
That does it for all the interviews that we have for Motor City Comic Con. But stay tuned throughout the summer while we have more announcements for fun times ahead.
Yep, and we will be back like normal this weekend doing some comic reviews. So we'll see you guys then.
Cheers.
That didn't sound exciting.
Cheers!